Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. It's obvious that school prayer is a hot potato these days, as indicated by two rather revealing news stories. The first is from the Washington Post and dated January 26, 2012, with the headline, "Student Faces Town's Wrath in Protest Against a Prayer." Here's the short version. Cranston, Rhode Island. She is 16, the daughter of a firefighter and a nurse, a self-proclaimed nerd who loves Harry Potter and Facebook. But Jessica Alquist is also an outspoken atheist who has incensed this heavily Roman Catholic city with a successful lawsuit to get a prayer removed from the wall of her high school auditorium where it has hung for 49 years. A federal judge ruled this month that the prayer's presence at Cranston High School West was unconstitutional, concluding that it violated the principle of government neutrality in religion. The second story is from the Miami Herald, dated Wednesday, March 14, 2012. Senate approves school prayer bill, Tallahassee, Florida. And that's the subject of our discussion today. So which is it, Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, to pray or not to pray? Where do you go on this heated debate?
Well, it's been going for many, many decades, hasn't it?
It certainly
has.
And
I seized on the Florida case because that's one of the more recent and most interesting and in some ways least objectionable. But we really need to discuss in these few minutes that we've got what's really going on here. The United States is nominally a Christian country. I think we all agree on that. Yes. Some people agree even more and think that it literally is a Christian government. It's not that. Tune in for other programs, right?
Yes, exactly.
We're always talking about that. But you know, it's a reasonable assumption. This is nominally a Christian country. But when I look at the facts and this debate, it really kicked into high gear at about the point two things happened. The diversity, which has always been somewhat present, but has really just blown almost out of control in recent years, about 40, 50 years ago, this country became much more diverse, not just because of incoming immigrants, there's always been those, but religious diversity increased. Non-Christian religion started to take off.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
People, because of an increasing standard of living and you know, the stresses of modern life, started to just throw off their nominal Christian faith. It was always a pretty nominal, but now it's antagonistic for many people. They don't want Christianity. And yet, when I look back and think on church-state issues, it's also about that point in the 60s and 70s that the Supreme Court started to do what it really should have done a lot earlier. It started to get government out of the religion business. Mm-hmm. I can quite easily grant that on the point of perhaps some people's personal spirituality, those things weren't working quite in tandem. Because it's precisely at the point that people do need to be reminded of spirituality that the separationist argument started to remove the vestiges of prayer and public religion. But they never quite realized that there was a certain hazard from the government promoting a particular point of religion. Even as I can freely acknowledge that all people need to be drawn to the spiritual, and it's to our loss to pull away. But once upon a time in the United States, you know, prayer was pretty much routine in public places and in schools.
Now, let me stop you just for a minute. You said that we need to be drawn to the spiritual. Do you make then a division between spiritual and religious?
Absolutely. I know you're teasing me out for the listeners. I make an absolute division, and it's the difference between night and day.
Yes.
To me, religion without spirituality is a dry and usually pernicious force. Mm-hmm. You know, because religion tries to organize people along belief lines, and one religionist won't get along with another religionist. Whole countries have religious identities that can empower their own sense of entitlement, and usually with religion, it means that another religion is somehow less than ideal, perhaps even portrayed as absolute evil. Mm-hmm. So when you have just religion by itself, it easily becomes an incredibly negative, violent force in society. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't be without spirituality. The origin of all great religions, and certainly as a Seventh-day Adventist Christian, I know that the origin of my faith is the incredible spiritual dynamic that Jesus Christ communicated to the world.
Yes.
He was bringing a kingdom of the Spirit. He was bringing a life lived in the Spirit, in the individual's inner life and moral dynamic. And just to say you belong to a church, or you will project to your community a certain sense of or a certain set of criteria of behavior, that's to miss the point totally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. So we are then basically talking about government's forays into the religious world as opposed to the spiritual world. But of course, when you start talking about some people's religion, you are stepping on their spirituality as well.
Absolutely. And that's why, or part of the reason why, the Supreme Court become more, and other government agencies, but ending up with the Supreme Court, they've been very careful to sort of cleave between the two.
Yes, yes.
You don't want the civil powers and the magistrate to be telling you how you practice your religion.
Okay, very good.
But many people and many parents, sensing that there's a lack in society, not sensing there's maybe a lack in their own family,
yes,
want the state to do it, and are sort of clamoring, you know, we want the prayer, we want the prayer. And politicians responding, give in now and then. And that's really what's happening in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida is sort of low, but I think it's on the Bible Belt, technically.
Low on the belt, yes.
Yeah. And there's some fundamentalist yearnings there, basic probably Protestant fundamentalism, and people there have been clamoring. They see all the crime and the teen pregnancies and the drugs and all the rest. So, you know, let's fix it. Let's have prayer in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from a purely sociological point of view, it's not going to fix anything if the family is dysfunctional. It's not going to fix very much if the society continues to be not just heedless, but even antagonistic to true lived faith.
Yes.
But it's probably comes from a good intention. I'll easily grant that on this Florida thing. And they have set it up the correct way. That's the irony of this, and that's why I wanted to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
This prayer is not to be organized or composed or mandated or directed by the school administration. They're supposed to be totally out of it, and it's just a time that's set up for student-led, in fact, it's not just prayer. I'm trying to think of the term they use.
Inspirational messages.
Yes. they mean primarily prayer, but
yeah.
Conceivably a young person could get up and just talk about what religion and their faith means to them,
mm-hmm.
which would be very helpful. You know, basically, that's how Christianity advanced, by
yes.
the witness of somebody who had been changed in their life. That's
so that is good, sort of, in a way.
Absolutely.
Yes, okay.
And from a church-state point of view, that's what it should be. The administration should be out of it. In the real world...
Let's get real, yes.
I can't for a moment imagine in a school environment. My son goes to a public middle school, and believe me, it's a mixed multitude. and I admire the principal and the teachers there. I cannot see in the real world that they would dare let several young people loose at a public time
mm-hmm.
to sort of hold forth on whatever moves them. First of all, there will be weird and wonderful religions portrayed, and,
yes.
and those people that want prayer, they want a certain sort of prayer.
Yes,
you got to face it.
Yes, they do.
I'm quite sure most of them don't want an Islamic prayer.
Yes.
They would probably shudder if it was a Buddhist chant. And they will just go ballistic if it's some, I'm trying to think of some goth
yes.
kid who gets up and goes on about the dark forces.
The dark forces and starts
and
talking to a tree. Yes, okay.
Yeah. Not to mention kids that just have a sense of troubling the authorities. They'll get up and indulge themselves.
Yes.
So I think very quickly it will either be stopped or directed. So I can see complications down the line, but the way it's written, it's okay.
And there you go. If the school jumps in and says, hey, that's the wrong prayer for you to be saying here, if they get after the people who are praying to the tree or to the Goth gods, they're basically trying to structure a religious or a spiritual belief in the people who are responding to this bill.
Absolutely. They almost can't win for losing.
Really?
I do not think anyone's thought it. They've either not thought it through or they have an agenda they haven't told us about.
Yes, yes, yes.
When I wrote something on our Liberty blog the other day, I referred to something that as a Seventh-day Adventist moderates my view a lot on this. Mm-hmm. None of this is new, totally new. You know, I tried to put it in the time frame of the last 30, 40 years. But at the beginning of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which was began in the mid-1800s, and they had these same questions. And about 30 years after the beginning of our church, Ellen White, an Adventist pioneer, wrote some advice on dealing with this to those like myself who were involved in church-state issues. And she said she didn't think it was right or legal, so she meant morally right nor legal, that the government require the Bible study in public schools, which is close to the prayer, the same sort of dynamic.
Yes, yes.
She didn't think it was right. But she says it will happen because there were such strong forces to push it. And she says we shouldn't fight too strongly against this. Such a great thing is having young people read the Bible. And she said that many will find truth and their lives will be improved by this. And a good thing personally will come from it. Obviously a bad thing on church-state dynamics. But I'm trying to do the same on the school prayer thing. I think it could easily come to a bad end, I mean, in the larger scheme of things. But short term, it's not at all bad to allow young people to think about spiritual things and hopefully those that have true spirituality to express it.
Yeah.
I mean, the Constitution guarantees it, after all.
Now, someone who has true spirituality, let's stay with that just for a moment here, Lincoln. Someone who has true spirituality, would a person with true spirituality insist on being allowed to pray openly at public school?
You're really snapping today, aren't you? Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And that's the great irony of all these sort of things. Like, for example, I should remember the sports star who was very conspicuously praying, kneeling before
his... Oh, yeah, the football guy, yeah. You and I are such sports fans. We can't even remember his name.
I don't follow that sort of stuff.
Right.
I should. My son is getting very interested in all that.
Okay.
Well, you know, that's not the sort of activity that particularly is associated with spiritual behavior to start with. Not that it's overtly wrong, but it's not really the right context. So to make a conspicuous moment of that public prayer is really, as I think, more analogous to where the Bible speaks about the publican standing up in public to make sure everybody saw him. And, you know, I thank thee, Lord, that I'm not like other men.
Yes.
And that's one of the most damned prayers in the Bible that misses the whole point of it. It's not that a good prayer cannot be given in public, but we're talking to God. And Jesus in the New Testament spoke about people going and praying in secret, and your Father will hear in secret. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't hear just because you shout it from the mountaintop or in a crowded room. So people need to keep that in mind. But to be restricted in the public forum is clearly a bad sign for a society. So that's what we're technically fighting against. But when it's on a personal level, yes, I would be a little suspicious of the real religiosity in the best sense of someone that's demanding that public forum. I don't know about the young people. They probably are not quite like that. I would like to encourage well-meaning young Christian people to speak more about their faith because sometimes they can be intimidated by their peers.
Yes.
You know, I know my son. I mean, they're rubbish kids that even look like they're slightly religious. So I think this is could be a severe test for those young people who know what to do and feel sort of moved on their hearts. But to stand up in front of your peers and really pray... not just mouth some words for a laugh or something. That will be the ultimate test. It's a very interesting occasion, I think. It sort of turned the school prayer issue on its head, both legally and personally.
We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. Our subject today is school prayer. And I like what you said earlier, Lincoln. I always like what you say, but there's one particular thing that stuck out in my mind. You said that a lot of parents are insisting on school prayer to make up for a lack of spirituality in the home. Now, expand on that a little bit. What are we not doing? Where are we falling short as parents that we need to somehow let the world know that we're spiritual because we're saying we want prayer in school?
Well, let me get on my social analysis cap.
Okay.
Because there's no simple answers to all of this. But from what little that I have read on this, and well, I've read a lot,
yes.
My reading, my own personal experience, I think you can start to look at certain markers. The Bible and I think Islam, Judaism, and you know other religions are pretty heavy on parents and the community. Mm-hmm. Teaching young people, but starting in a home environment, that's hardly an unusual construct. But, you know, looking at our society, what's happened in the last century or so to disable this home environment? First of all, many, if not most of the mothers are working.
Yes.
So you have a home where there's not that together time. Mm-hmm. We know that people are not eating meals together very much. Even when they're in the same house, they don't eat meals. They're commuting, the kids go in, I know mine, they go on a school bus, so they're away from home longer. Church attendance, which the family dictates, the church can't dictate that its members go.
Yes.
The church attendance is way down. You know, even the Seventh Adventist Church, which is one of the more vibrant Protestant churches in the United States, there's no question now, membership is rising fairly rapidly. Mm-hmm. Only one-third of Seventh-day Adventists attend church once a month. And that's shocking. But, you know, it goes down from there. We, in the newspaper, read about the Catholic Church, and, you know, you see pictures from St. Peter and all the priests and the prelates and all the rest. It looks impressive. Mm-hmm. The attendance at Catholic Church is so low, it's almost statistically negligible.
Mm-hmm.
So the practice of religion or the modeling of religion by parents is very low. And divorce rates are incredibly high, which means that, well, among other things, we know from religious liberty, there are tussles between parents about which religion, if any, sometimes one parent doesn't want any religion to be projected to the child.
Yes.
The other parents want something. So it disrupts this whole process. And, of course, just the increasing prosperity of our society has removed most of the higher values, not just religion. Mm-hmm. I mean, religion is the epitome of high values, but, you know, the Facebook and all the rest, and you know, I wish it were just Facebook. It goes lower than the face.
Yes.
You know, this sort of stuff is just grotesque. So I think there's a brutalization of the higher faculties of people in our society, and it starts in the home.
Mm-hmm.
The solution should start in the home, not in the school. I'm quite sure any teacher, you know, they're listening. They could call us up sometime on the program, I'm sure, but they would agree.
Yes.
You know, the school can't solve something. In fact, if the school goes counter to the parents, they've set up a conflict. But the parents can undermine what the school says very, very quickly.
These are harsh words that you're saying here to our parents. We are falling short as parents. We are really missing the mark because we are insisting that someone else take care of the problem. Let's have the government step in and regulate religion for us so that we'll get some, so that our kids will get some, so that at the end of the day, somebody has prayed in our kids' presence. That's basically what I'm hearing people saying on this thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it tells me, too, that the parents themselves having drifted because our society as a whole, you know, it's a corporate drift.
Yes.
But they've fallen for the thing that we started at the beginning, thinking that religion or spirituality is expressed through religious structure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it can be expressed through it, but it's not determined by it.
Yeah.
And so to enforce a dynamic where religion is introduced or worse, this is not the school thing now, but projecting ahead on our religious liberty concern, worse, say, to use the government power to say that people must worship on a certain day,
mm-hmm.
is to absolutely miss the whole point and to be encouraging or a furtherance of the misunderstanding to start with. It will be to more of the same, a mechanical, worldly, destructive view of what religion is that misses the spiritual point.
This is pretty strange because, come to think of it, Lincoln, if there was a knock on the door of one of the parents from these schools, and they open the door, and there's a gentleman there with a nice suit on and a tie, and he says, "Hi, I'm from the government department of prayer, and I would recommend very strongly that you allow inspirational messages in your house. As a matter of fact, we want to encourage that. Thank you and have a nice day." That parent would go ballistic. That parent would say, "What on earth are you doing here telling me what I can and can't do in my very own home?" But yet we're wanting the government to step in and say what we can and can't do when it comes to religion in our schools. That is just wrong.
Absolutely. Because in many ways, we're wanting religion to take care of our lives on many fronts, not just on religion. Right. And the government is watching us inadvertently. Well, not inadvertently, but it can't help with the technology.
Really?
It knows where what we buy, where we go, where we
look. What we search, what we say.
And as we go into the war on terrorism, we know that the government is going to be surveilling us more consciously. Mm. All of this is wrong. You know, where's this mostly Republican expressed idea of self-reliance in the country? We don't want the government in our business any more than it needs to be to maintain law and order and a good public polity. But the finer, higher things of life really always historically were and should be in the family and in the local community.
So what would you say then, Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, what would you tell schools, what would you tell parents if you got up and you had an assembly at a school, a public school that was had this battle going on, shall we allow prayer in the school, what should we do? What would you tell them? I'll give you the audience. There they are. What do you say?
Well, I would tell them what we always say, that this is that the school is not the one to organize it. But constitutionally, that's improper. And it would even be fraught for the school to pass notices home to the students, through the students to their homes, saying, "You must have, you know, it's time that you had a better devotional life in your home." They can't do it. They're sort of stuck. Our message is to the parents, the listeners who represent homes, we need to take these things at heart as a society. Real change starts in the society. It doesn't usually start from just a law or some, you know, McCarthy sitting in a hearing and wanting to do things. That might make change, but bad change. But the proper change, the most effective change, starts at a baseline level as people in their daily interaction change their behavior and in this case, inculcate religious and moral thinking into their young people. That will have a huge effect on everything. It'll have effect on the crime rate. It'll have an effect on the divorce rate and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it will stop some of the contention in the schools. What I'll say very freely, and I know we're starting to get close to our cutoff time, that under the separation of church and state initiatives that have characterized the last several decades, a number of schools, I think, have overreacted. And they tend, in many, many cases, to clamp down rapidly on any expression of religion by the students. And that's wrong. In a class, if a student in their legitimate response to a question wants to relate that to their religious faith, that's an appropriate response. But they've often been shut down or disciplined for that.
Right.
If an assignment, a piece of artwork or whatever, and the young person wants to draw Jesus Christ or something, they're allowed to. But they're often disciplined for that. Those things are wrong. And that gives a lot of traction to fundraisers from people who really want more than that, want the school to be the headmaster on religion. So as I started at the beginning of this program by saying, this Florida thing, I think, is a bit misbegotten, but technically it abides by the rules. Young people should be allowed to express themselves in prayer or any other religious expression and statement to their peers. The school should be absolutely, a public school should be restricted. Of course, there's church schools and private schools. There's full religious freedom of expression in all of those environments. But the public school, we don't want the government dictating religion to us or certainly to our impressionable young people.
Which brings us right back to the very first story I quoted at the beginning of the program, Jessica Ahlquist, the 16-year-old daughter of firefighter and nurse, who has made the high school she's in take a prayer down from the wall. Good thing? Is this on the right track? Did she have good cause for it, and should it have been done?
Well, if it was posted there by the
49 years ago, it was posted there.
Well, you know, that's what makes a lot of headlines.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that were done a long time ago that should have been stopped a long time ago.
Okay, all right.
But that's what rattles people. Oh, we've done it forever.
Yeah.
Remember, the Supreme Court said that young people, way after the fact, shouldn't be forced to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. That offended many people. It was passed in 1956, I think. But it took a couple of decades for the Supreme Court to decide that they were not required. In between, people were blithely happy. But the dynamic was bad, even though there's nothing wrong with that statement. But it does roll up a Christian point of view with the government. And I'm happy with the Christian point of view.
Yes.
But I would be very unhappy if this government were projecting an Islamic point of view, for example, which it could do if this was an Islamic society. Mm. So you want a government that's neutral and not forcing you toward or away from any particular religious viewpoint.
And those people in Florida, let me tell you, folks,
we wish them the Lord's very best.
Well, absolutely. But do not be surprised if during your prayer time, somebody rolls out a prayer rug and faces toward Mecca. It's probably going to happen.
I'm praying for the teachers there. They've got an interesting time ahead of them.
They do, indeed. Well, we have had a fantastic discussion here on School Prayer. Lincoln, always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And listener, I want to invite you to a website, www.libertymagazine.org. You can listen to these programs. You can share these programs with someone. You might want to just download this one and share it with someone who has these issues, these questions in his or her own mind. You can just download this one. This one's called School Prayer, and I just recommend that you go to libertymagazine.org, download it, and share it. Listen to it again prayerfully, because I believe that what Lincoln Steed has told us today is very important for our understanding, our full understanding of what God has in mind when He wants us to be His children here on this earth. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.